take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Hey, welcome to Nurses Out Loud. I am your host, Nurse April. Today's topic is going to be a little bit heavy, but it's been something that's been on my mind for years. And I'm guessing that if I've thought about it, then there are many other parents out there who have as well. As a parent of six children, four of whom I gave birth to, and two that were a blessing added into my family when I remarried my husband, I have a lot of different personality types in my family, and not just with my children, but of course my extended family as well. I have four brothers, one sister-in-law who's very much my sister, and then I have nieces and nephews, lots of cousins, aunts, and uncles. I actually have a very big family. And one thing that has plagued me since I was a young child and has always kind of sat on the shelf in the back of my head, and I think about it, it's almost like this little troll that's constantly looking at me and teasing me and threatening me. But that is the topic of suicide. Suicide is, of course, becoming a lot more common. There has been an uptick of suicides amongst young people in particular. And I actually want to talk about it from the standpoint of a parent and how it makes me feel to worry that one of my children might be experiencing a depression so deep that it leads them to having thoughts of suicide and I don't even know about it. Or maybe I know that they have a propensity for it, but I don't know what to do about it. So I want to talk about this, but before we get into this discussion, let's first do a little bit of housekeeping. The Nurses Out Loud airs Monday through Friday. We have a different nurse host every day. We come on the air at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then we have an encore at 11 p.m. But if you miss any of our shows, you can always listen to podcasts. They go to podcast a day after the show airs, and you can listen on any of your favorite podcasting apps. You can visit americaoutloud.news. And let that be one of your main sources for all of the up-to-date stories that's going on in the news cycle. And we really have coverage of lots of different topics. So americaoutloud.news should be your first stop for up-to-date news and what's happening in the world. Also, you can visit americaoutloud.shop and check out some exclusive featured offers. There are negotiated discounts in the shop for America Out Loud listeners, and the codes are in the banner ads, and they change often, so check back daily. Now, this is a difficult topic, as I said before. Nobody really wants to talk about it, but we do have these conversations and intimate moments with friends and family, especially if you know of someone who's actually committed suicide in your life. As a parent who has children who struggle with depression, it is something that's very scary for me. What scares me is the thought that I could be the cause of my child feeling so exasperated or so beat down that they feel like giving up. Or I could just not be whatever it is that they're needing to feel like life is worth living. Like, I think that survivors of suicide have this guilt and this constant question of what did I do wrong or what could I have done differently. I remember having a patient one time. This was many years ago, and He actually was in the hospital because he had attempted suicide, and it was his fourth attempt at suicide, and it was unsuccessful. And his mother was at his bedside, and he was getting ready to go into surgery because he had done something that caused a lot of damage to his bones. And I won't say exactly what it is, but he did something and he ended up with a lot of broken bones. And I was talking to him right before he went back for surgery, and he had made a comment that this would be his last time trying, and that he believed that there obviously was some purpose in his life, which was the reason why every time he attempted suicide, it didn't work. And I remember his mom, looking at his mom, and of course she was grateful that her son was still alive, but I felt like there was this sense inside of her of like, I don't know, it was just kind of a sadness, of course, but also a resolve within her head that at some point she was going to walk in, or she was going to get a call and find out that her son was gone. And I don't know if she had grieved already, but she didn't seem frantic, she didn't seem panicked. She kind of just had this evenness about her. It was interesting. I can't quite put words to it, but she was very calm for the situation. Not that she didn't have any feelings, but she seemed very calm. And over the years, I've always thought back on that, and I've wondered why. And as a parent who has children who struggle with feelings of depression and seeing therapists for different reasons, I think often about, you know, when they really start to get emotional, when they really start to get frustrated with the way that life is going for them, will they have those thoughts and will they act on those thoughts? Sometimes I find that I am hesitant to even say things or do things because I fear that I might trigger something that will push them over the edge. And with everything going on within the transgender movement and with everything, you know, you guys have heard me talk about this in the past, but one of the famous lines that they like to say is, would you rather have a living daughter or a dead son? So the world around transgender healthcare, transgender treatments and therapy has definitely weaponized the trauma and the fear associated with suicide. And I wonder often to myself, am I being manipulated? Are people using the threat of suicide to manipulate us to behave in a certain way because they know that the vast majority of people will do anything they can to make sure that a person doesn't make that ultimate final decision that cannot be reversed? And I think about how it affects my parenting. I think a lot about how parenting used to be, you know, decades ago, when society was far more traditional in their values, and how people like in my parents' generation used to talk about how difficult it was growing up, but at the same time, how much respect they had for their parents. Like kids back in the day, they weren't babied like they are now. Now we have a society where you can't parent. You can't be a strict parent. You cannot have certain values because society is moving in this direction where you have to affirm, you have to support, you have to give your children the opportunity to be children for as long as they want to be children. So if that means not giving them too many chores, letting them play video games, letting them have access to technology, or letting them do all the things that they want to do to keep them happy and satiated. And if you don't, you're a bad parent. And if they get depressed, or if they decide that they want to run away, or they want to live with someone else, or they, you know, they can report you, all these things. There's all these threats that go against parents nowadays that have really handcuffed us and kept us from being able to truly train our children the way, at least the way that things used to be when our society was more conservative. So for an example, I have a son who is a junior in high school, and it's a very difficult year. He has chosen to take a lot of really intense classes, and he has a lot of homework. And as a parent, I'm watching him, you know, he's constantly feels this stress. It feels heavy. He's not happy. He constantly has this attitude where he looks and feels overwhelmed. And he's trying to maintain this certain grade point average. He wants to, you know, get to a certain level within his class rank. And he's constantly thinking about being able to get into certain colleges and you know, being competitive, which, of course, is something that we as parents, especially in America, but I think this is a global thing. We want our children to push themselves to do the best that they can, of course. But when it becomes so much that it feels like they are not coping well, what do you do? So one of the things that I guess concerns me when I see him behaving this way, where he comes home and he's stressed out and he's like, I have all this homework to do, and oh, I got this grade on this exam, and he just feels like he's just spiraling into this depression. In my view, that's what it feels like. It's like, how do I stop it? How do I help him? Because the one thing that concerns me is, will he get so stressed out and so overwhelmed that he decides that he just wants to give up? And maybe I have this concern because in the area where I live, it seems like, okay, so I used to live in a different city right next door to the city that I live in currently. And in that city, which was a very affluent city in Texas, every single year, we were notified of a child who had committed suicide that year. Every year. And it wasn't not uncommon for one of those kids who committed suicide to be either a classmate of one of my children's or a friend. And so maybe that's another reason why I feel this angst, because it has hit so close to home so many times. Like, legit, for like several years in a row, there was a suicide. And this was a small district. It wasn't like a big district. And even in the new city where we've been living for a few years, but, well, several years, there's still this, you know, these reports of these teenagers who feel overwhelmed with life and they give up. And I've even had a colleague, I worked with a friend who her daughter committed suicide when she was 14 years old. And it's been well over 10 years now since her daughter committed suicide, but of course her pain will never go away. Her husband actually found her after she had done what she did. And of course, the seeing that is burned in your head for all of eternity. You'll never not see that. So as the parent, to find the child in that state is beyond traumatizing. And how people go on from that is amazing to me. I mean, people's strength and courage and fortitude, and just, I believe, of course, it has to be that God has surrounded them with so much comfort and a peace that surpasses all understanding that they could even continue on after such a tragedy, after experiencing something so painful. But for those of us on the outside looking in, it's terrifying. What do you do when you need to parent your child. You need to be able to set boundaries and restrictions, and you need to be able to say, hey, these are things that are important. For instance, okay, let me back up. So I was telling you about my son who is in high school right now, and he's really struggling to maintain his grade point average, and he's taking a lot of, difficult classes, and his schedule is just intense. He has homework every night, and he's working on his homework until late into the night. Now, as a parent of a teenager, I have expectations. He's getting older, and I'm trying to raise him to become a good man who's capable of taking care of his family and being a good, productive member of society and being a good Christian man who is out here doing the work of God. So one of the things that I want my son to do in learning how to become mature is to do things like the dishes. Something that simple, as I want to make sure that, you know, he does the dishes every day. Or, you know, he has other chores he needs. On the weekends, he's supposed to cut the grass, and he also is supposed to clean out the pool. We pay him to do these things, by the way. But it's a way of helping him to learn how to value money and also how to, you know, take care of his responsibilities, prioritize his time. Well, right now, because school has become so intense for him, asking him to do the dishes is like too much. He cannot take it. He literally is like, I can't. I have homework to do. And I'm like, as a parent, I'm like, I told you to do the dishes. Go do the dishes. It doesn't take that long. I mean, 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes max, then you can get back to doing your homework. So that's the push, right? You're trying to push them to be more responsible. I want my son to get a job. He wants a car. And the deal with our household and with our children is that we will pay for half of whatever you save. If you want a car, you have to save half. We'll pay the other half. But we're not going to just give it to you. Everyone parents differently. And of course, being in school and my son sees his friends who get cars and they don't have to do anything for them, and his friends don't have chores and they don't have responsibilities, it makes it really, really difficult on us as parents, because we do have these expectations. We do have different values. His friends don't have to go to church on Sunday. He has to go to church on Sunday, and that frustrates him because he'd rather be at home sleeping in and then playing video games, because he does have such an intense week of school that it's like he feels like that's his only day or his only time to really like relax. And I totally understand that. As an adult who has a stressful job, and so does my husband, I mean, we understand the need or the desire to want to veg out and just, you know, entertain yourself and not think. But at the same time, we're trying to raise a responsible human. And in doing responsible human things, to me as a parent, it's important to maintain the order of the house. And so as a team, we're supposed to work together. I want you to do the dishes. I'm not asking you to cook dinner, although there was a time when we have. So right now, David, my youngest, he's home, and all the other kids are pretty much, they're grown and doing their own thing. But when they were all home, we used to have it where every kid had a day of the week where they had to make dinner. So not only were they cooking dinner and having to clean the dishes, but they still had their homework. And the other kids also had jobs because they wanted cars. And we would push our kids, you know, pretty early on. As soon as they were able, we were like, start looking for a job. You need to understand what it's like to work and serve others, earn your own money, save your money, all of those good things, right? So this particular one, he's like, it's too hard. I can't do it. It's too much. And I'm like, how is it too much? Your siblings did it. And, you know, as a parent, you're not supposed to compare your kids. But look, I'm giving you like, I'm just... This is my therapy session, you guys. I'm putting it all out there, and maybe you guys can give me some advice. And also, I'm sure there's some of you guys who can relate. But here I am. This is the last of the Mohicans. This is the last kid that we're trying to raise, and he is not making it easy. But part of my struggle is I don't want to push so hard that he feels completely overwhelmed and wants to jump over the edge. But at the same time, I don't want to feel like I'm being manipulated by that threat, that it's so much, it's too much, and therefore, you know, he can't. I just don't know. I don't know where this is, like, if it's just me, if I'm the only parent who thinks this way, and maybe I am. But it's tough. Like, I really want my son to be able to mature and grow. I want him to accomplish things. I tell him all the time, like, you don't have to do this. You don't have to try to get this amazing grade point average. You don't have to take all these really difficult classes. You're pushing yourself, and he's pushing himself like this because he also has a very competitive spirit. He is competing with his friends, which he has a good group of friends who are also very smart, top of the class. And so I feel like he's competing with them, trying to stay, you know, competitive. And that, of course, makes it difficult because he's putting this pressure on himself. And then I feel like, okay, if I add to the pressure, could I tip him over? Now, why do I feel this way so strongly? Well, I have an uncle, actually, who committed suicide when I was younger. I was an adult, but I remember it very well. And I have family who have attempted suicide, very close to me. Thankfully, they were not successful, but obviously this is something that, you know, is in my family. It's in my, you know, immediate family and extended family. And so it scares me. And yet at the same time, I don't want it to control me. I don't want it to prevent me from being able to do the things that I feel like I need to do as a mom. And as a sister, as a cousin, as a niece, as a wife, like all of the things, like I want to be able to say, but I don't say, I bite my tongue. I want to be able to help my children grow, and I want them to stand on my shoulders. I always tell them, I want you to stand on my shoulders. You don't need to make all of the mistakes that I made. I want you to go further than I ever went. And so I try to push them, you know, kind of give them a little extra encouragement, a little boost, a little look, you know, a little tough love. Maybe they consider it a lot of tough love, but I don't know if it's tough love because we are, you know, raising a generation that's very soft because it's so prevalent and they're so aware of suicide that they think that it's an option. Not that my son has ever said anything about suicide. Again, I think that this fear, this maybe irrational fear, maybe not irrational fear, comes from seeing so many news stories and having seen so many kids within our school district who have committed suicide that it just terrifies me. It's just one of those things that I just don't ever want to experience, and I know nobody wants to experience. But what do we do? How do we parent? And this also pulls back or draws back into my experience as having a parent who has a child who is transgender, who believes they're transgender, and who I know I have to wrestle with the threat of, if I push too hard, will he give up? So I don't say anything, but if I don't say anything, will he make life choices that will cause him so much pain and so much agony that he wants to give up? It's like there's no winning in this situation. Now I need to go to break, but on the other side of the break, I want to talk more about what it's like living in a society where suicide has become the norm rather than the exception. And what do we do about that?
It's time and this is what.
Hey everyone, Nurse Kimberly Overton here from Nurses Out Loud. Over time, our cell signaling molecules diminish, leaving us vulnerable to the wear and tear of life. With the Sia Redox, you can restore and revitalize your body at the cellular level. This is an incredible product that I personally use and can attest to seeing fantastic results, including better sleep, increased energy, improved mood, and a decrease in my joint pain. ASEA supports your immune system, enhancing your body's natural ability to repair itself. It promotes overall well-being so that you can experience a new level of vitality and resilience. It's time to take control of your health and experience the power of ASEA. Visit our online store today at americaoutloud.shop and use promo code OUTLOUD to save 15%. Be sure to tune in to Nurses Out Loud Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Cofix RX Nasal Solution has completed the circle and is now offering throat spray with povidone iodine. That completes the protocol doctors like Peter McCullough recommend. If staying healthy is important, you'll want to make sure to add throat spray to your next order of Cofix RX. For a limited time and exclusive for America Out Loud listeners only, you can save 25% off your entire order. Let's double down against colds, flus, strep, RSV, HRV, COVID, and more. Click the banner or go to America Out Loud shop to get 25% off your entire order. Use coupon code OUTLOUD25. That's coupon code OUTLOUD25.
AmericaOutloud.news is beaten to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, troubled, misled, joyful, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Hey, welcome back. This is your host, Nurse April, and today I am continuing with this topic, which is heavy, and I'm so sorry for bringing down all of your moods. If this is not a good topic, then please come back next week. I'll be better, I promise. But today I have been talking about suicide because it has been heavy on my heart. And probably because I see, you know, come across a lot of news stories about different people who've committed suicide, or I find out about people close to me who have committed suicide. And it's just one of those things that is terrifying to me. The thought of finding someone that I love in that state is just terrifying. So I wanted to look up some statistics about suicide deaths in the United States and like what the demographic characteristics are. So I went to the cdc.gov website, and what it says is, first of all, there has been an increase in suicides since 2021. So from 2021 to 2022, there was an overall increase of 2.6%. The breakdown of demographics is, in 2022, 39,255 men or males committed suicide, and 10,194 females, which is, I didn't realize there was that big of a disparity between males and females. And when they break it down by race and ethnicity, the highest group for suicide is white at 37,459. Right under that, and it's quite a huge jump down, we have Hispanics or Latinos who committed suicide in 2022. There was 5,120. Then we have Blacks at 3,825. Then we have Asians at 1,458. And then way down is, let's see, American Indians or Alaska Natives, 650. Multiracial, 681. And then we have Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islanders, 95. The highest group as far as age goes, the most common age for committing suicide, interestingly enough, is between the age of 45 and 64 years old. No, actually I'm wrong. The highest age group is 25 to 44 years, and that's 16,843 people. And then right underneath that was 45 to 64 year olds at 15,632. Then those over 65, there was 10,433. And then those between the ages of 10 and 24, there were 6,529. So, my goodness. In 2021, 12.3 million adults seriously thought about suicide. 3.5 million adults made a plan. And 1.7 million adults attempted suicide. I'm wondering why it is that certain groups have such a high rate of suicide over others. And I know that probably needs to be stratified. And, of course, there's a much larger population of white Americans, and then there's a smaller population of, but still, that doesn't make sense to me with when I'm looking at the numbers, because there is such a disparity between. So here we are. Let me scroll back up a little bit. Males, obviously, still, a high number, 39,255. So in total, the number of people who committed suicide in 2022 was 49,449. And 37,000 of those were white. That's so interesting to me. I wonder what's going on. I wonder if there's a cultural difference in the way that we respond to stress and anxiety and depression. Why is it that so many more people, or so many fewer people, like in other races, like Asian and Hawaiian, are less likely to commit suicide? It's interesting to me. No, I take that back, because Asians was still, it's not as high, not nearly as high as white or even black, but it's the American Indians, but there's not as many of them, I guess. That's true. Okay, so I need to be able to look at this from a different perspective. I need to be able to look at the numbers, break it down a little better to understand what's the percentage of the population of that particular race. Because what I'm looking for right now, you guys know I'm solution-based. I want to find a solution to the problem. I don't want to just marinate on the problem. I want to find a solution. So if there are certain cultures who are coping better with the stresses of life, I want to know why. What are they doing that the rest of us aren't doing? I'm also curious to know if there are trends in suicide based on social contagion almost. So if, for instance, youth are hearing stories about friends who are considering or contemplating suicide, if they're hearing stories about people that they admire, perhaps it's a celebrity, or maybe it's not somebody they know, but it's somebody that's, in their vicinity. Does that increase someone's chances of making a plan towards suicide? Is this a conversation that we should be having? Or does having the conversation put thoughts in people's heads that wouldn't have otherwise been there? I don't know, you guys. I don't know. Okay, let's back up. So having people in your family who have anxiety and depression, it's like walking on eggshells. So anybody who has that for themselves, who's experienced it, or who has lived with someone who has anxiety and depression, then you know what I'm talking about. And so you don't want to say or do something that will trigger them. Because especially when you have someone who's in and out of depression, when somebody enters into this state, it's tough. It's really tough for them and for the people around them. And to try to help someone and pull someone out of that sinkhole, it's not easy. So we try to create these environments around those that we love to foster good feelings and hope. And in doing that, you know, and we try to protect them from pain, and we try to protect them from frustrations that are overwhelming so that they don't spin into these cycles, right? But in our effort to try to protect them, are we hurting them? I don't know. You guys, I don't know the answers. I'm just, you know, these are my thoughts. These are the things that run through my head and I wonder about. So when I think about my kids and I think about times when I'm like, okay, I'm really watching this one because they seem to be overreacting to the stimuli, whatever that is, whether it is, you know, getting into a fight with friends or being bullied or having the stress of school weighing heavy on them or feeling like they're, you know, just not getting the experience in life that they want. Is their reaction normal or is it excessive and abnormal? What are the signs that parents who've experienced a child who committed suicide, what are those signs? I know, for instance, my daughter had a friend who committed suicide, and his parents knew that he was struggling with mental health problems, and he was on medication. He was struggling, and I'm not exactly sure what was the tipping point for him, but he had made threats, and actually I think he had ended up getting on punishment for some reason. I don't remember exactly what it was, and I could ask my daughter, but I don't really want to bring it up because it is still something that she has a lot of, you know, regrets and pain and struggles with to this day. So I don't want to bring it up to her and bring her down. But I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, he had gotten in trouble for something and he was on punishment. And his mom stepped away to do something, to run an errand. And when she came back home, he had done what he needed to do to finish himself. And that, of course, was heartbreaking for, of course, for the family, but for all of his friends too. And every year they still go and visit his grave and they still go out to dinner with his mom. And, you know, it's been several years since it's happened. And, you know, they just, you know, they're still holding on to him and his memory. And they do walks, like these suicide walks and things. And I just wonder, and I know every parent probably thinks about this when they hear about a tragedy such as that. What are the parents thinking? What are the thoughts that are ruminating in their heads? What could I have done differently? Was it this thing that happened? Was it that experience? Could I have changed X, Y, and Z? I think about for myself when I am, because I worry. I mean, you guys, I've talked about my son and his struggle with his thoughts of being transgender. I wonder all the time, like, was it this instance where was I too hard on him during this time? Was it the divorce? Could I have just stayed longer with his dad? If I would have just stayed married, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Maybe he wouldn't have, you know, spiraled into this state of confusion. And I really do put a lot of weight on the divorce because he was doing so well before that. Like, literally, he was on this upward trajectory. He was happy. He was going to a school that he loved. He was having a lot of fun with his friends. My kid is a nerdy kid. He always has been. And so he wasn't into sports, and but he was into learning, and he played the violin and the cello, and he was into, you know, engineering type of things. And that was kind of the direction that he was going in. And he just went downhill after the divorce, truly. And so I do blame his depression on, I blame myself, because even though I know we are all independent human beings with our own human stories that we have to live out, and I personally don't think, for me, I don't look at other people and blame other people for the things that happened to me. But it took me years to come to that place where I could say, you know what, if you're blaming someone else for your problems, then you haven't looked deep enough. Because ultimately, what I found was, if you keep digging, eventually you're going to find out what it is that you did and what it is where you can change to be better. But when you haven't had a chance to mature to that level and you're still, you know, you're still young and immature, you you look for someone to blame and you kind of stick with that. So I do honestly think that my son looks at me as the reason for all of his problems, to be honest, because it was my choice to break up the family. And he's not the only one who struggled with my divorce. My other children have too. David, the youngest, he seems to be the most resilient. And I don't know if it's because he was so young when it happened. But my girls, you know, they were a little bit older when it happened. And they have their own struggles with the divorce. You guys, I know I've done stories in the past about divorce. And you guys know where I stand on that. And even though I am in an incredible, beautiful marriage now, I cannot say that I don't struggle with the fact that my kids are suffering because of that trauma. So if you or someone if you personally are struggling in your marriage and you are unhappy and you're considering divorce, I do understand it. I do. I know what it's like to be in that position. And whatever you decide is best for you, just know that no matter what, it's tough. It's going to be a tough road. And so when I'm looking at my kids and I'm thinking, okay, now my kids are struggling with issues because, you know, their life was turned upside down and they just don't know how to cope with it. Are they strong enough to push through pain and keep trying and keep pushing and keep trying until they come out on the other side? So far, obviously, yes, that is the case. They have been. They're all still here. But I guess going back to where I started the show, me as a parent, I kind of find myself walking on eggshells because my fear is I don't want to push them over the edge. And do I avoid parenting the way I feel like maybe the most beneficial in order to protect them from this boogie monster in my own head? I don't know. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts, because maybe I'm the only crazy one out here who's thinking this way, or maybe I'm not. But I really want my son to come down here and do the dishes. And at the same time, I don't want to stress him out too much. And that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Should I just give up and say, you know what? For this particular year, it's not even worth the battle. Or do I stand my ground and say, get your butt down here and do these dishes and then go back upstairs and finish your homework? Being a parent is not for the faint of heart, I promise. It is not easy. When they were young, we couldn't wait for them to get older. We thought things would get easier. But no, friends, it doesn't get easier. Not for all of us. Maybe for some of you guys. When I look at people's social media posts, and I am not one on social media. If any of you guys follow me on Instagram, you will know that, because I do not update, my social media very often. And the things that I do update it with are things like don't get vaccinated, don't get the vaccine, the vaccine's going to kill you, all that stuff. I push back. I may talk about politics, but I don't put a whole lot of things out there about my family. And that's just me. That's just my personal bent. I just don't feel like I'm the type to overshare in that way. I love looking at everyone else's families, but at the same time, when I look at other people's families, it does make me wonder, am I the only one out here struggling? Like, am I the only one out here having a really hard time raising these young people to be the adults that I dreamed that they would be? Do other people have this, get this pushback from their kids? Like, they're teenagers, of course. And I know a lot of people say teenagers are hard. Teenagers are so hard. I came across this Jordan Peterson video because we were just having a, you know, struggle. We were on the struggle bus with my 16-year-old. And I was like, I don't know. I don't even know what I looked up, what I looked up. But one of his videos came up and he was talking about how, yeah, kids are hard to like. They really are not easy to like. You have to work at it. And I'm like, right? Like, when these teenagers come at you with their attitudes, oh my gosh. And he's the baby, you guys. He's the baby. And so this is my last chance. This is my last hurrah. And I just want to enjoy it, but I'm feeling like it's not as fun as I thought it was going to be. And we've done this now, okay? So this is number 6. I have raised teenagers. I only have 2 left who are teenagers. My 19-year-old, who's already moved out, and I mean, technically, she's moved out. She's living in an apartment close to campus. She's in college. But, you know, she's kind of doing her own thing, and she's off on her own. And she's not going to be a teenager much longer, so I've got 1 teenager left, and he is not making it easy, I promise. So I guess in some ways I'm sharing this, my parenting struggles and woes with you guys, because I want you to know, those of you out there who feel the way I feel, you are not alone. You are not alone. Now, on the flip side, we do have some older children who are coming out of this teenage funk and are coming around. So my oldest son is 25. And then we have a 24-year-old, but he'll be 25 in a couple months. And then we have the 22-year-old. And then we have a 20, almost 21-year-old. And then we have the 19, almost 20-year-old. So a lot of my kids are moving out of that, you know, teenage angst. Boys take a little longer, you know, but the boys are definitely much better than they were. Okay. So the struggle has definitely eased up in many ways when it comes to dealing with like that tension that especially when it comes to that masculine tension between a father and a son, when the boys are trying to establish their position in the family and the dads are trying to maintain their alpha male position in the family. And, you know, there's that tension that goes on. And then there's the moms and the daughters, right? So we're trying to struggle to maintain our alpha position. And then our daughters are trying to rise up and become their own people. And they're struggling to have a voice and a say in the way their life goes. And the struggle is so real, y'all. Okay. So let me just say that there are, of course, good times. There's laughter and there's joy and there's beauty in parenting. Yes. That goes without saying, but let's not overlook the fact that parenting is also full of a lot of heartache and pain, a lot of praying, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of questioning yourself and where did I go wrong? I think this last week part of the reason why I've been having these thoughts in my head is because my oldest just turned 25. And as you guys know, my son, who is the oldest, is also the one struggling with being transgender. And so he won't talk to us at all. And so I had to go through his birthday without being able to talk to him and hug him and love on him and say happy birthday and celebrate him. Like, this is a milestone. 25 is a milestone. And knowing that there's this part of me that really wanted to reach out and I couldn't, because I'm afraid that if I, you know, were to stalk him and find him and locate him and, you know, and force my way back into his life for a moment, would that tip him over the edge? Because what these stupid therapists are out here telling me is that, you know, I need to give him his space and that I'm the problem and that I could be the reason why he commits suicide and all those things that they're saying. They're not helping. I promise you they're not, because the therapists are the ones who are telling these kids, don't talk to your parents anymore. Like that, this came out of a therapy session. And I don't even, you know, I've talked about this before, but I feel like there's this massive malpractice happening within the therapy community, and they're tragically tearing families apart. But once it's been said, the struggle is, how do you let go of that fear and move forward in faith and do the things that you're supposed to do when you feel like you're dealing with something so fragile that you could break it at any moment? So, I just wonder if I'm the only one. So, you know, this week, and as I was saying earlier, some of the things that I think about are, you know, what did I do? What could I have done differently? And I think about the divorce, and I think, okay, if I hadn't gotten divorced, my kids would have been okay. Would I have been okay? Well, I could have just, you know, sucked it up for long enough. I know, this sounds terrible, you guys. There are a lot of moms out there, a lot of women out there who stay in a marriage until the kids are grown up, and they do it for their children. And some people think that's weak. But I think after having experienced a situation like I did, where I had a very difficult divorce and where my kids really struggled because they didn't even realize how unhappy I was. They didn't know that we were having so many troubles. So it was really shocking for them. And so I think that trauma broke parts of them that I feel like I personally am responsible for, because I didn't suck it up and just deal with it. Everyone's story is different. Everyone's situation is different. If you are in an abusive relationship, please get out. Do not stay. I am not advocating that anyone stay if they're being physically abused by a husband or a wife. But if it's something that's more tolerable, if it's a situation that is more tolerable, if I could do things over, would I have stayed longer? Yes, I would. For the sake of my children, I would. Would that have solved all of the problems? No, I know that's not the case, because I know of a friend, I haven't talked to her in years, but she was a nurse that I worked with, and her parents actually were the ones who waited until the kids were grown, and then they finally decided to go their separate ways. And it actually broke her so much. Like, she was grown already, she was married, had children, but the fact that her parents got divorced tore her up. I mean, she was like obsessed over it. It messed her up, really, really did. And so I can't say that is going to be the solution for everyone. Waiting is not always going to fix the problem. Divorce in general is just, it's not good. And you guys know I'm a Christian, and so what the Bible talks about and why God hates divorce, I can see that now. Having experienced it and gone through it, I understand why God hates divorce, because it truly does affect entire generations. So if I could do things differently, that would be one of the things that I would do. Now, if that wasn't an option on the table, okay, let's take that option off the table. I'm still divorced. And I have these children. What would I have done different? Well, I would have tried to keep them in their environment where they were. before the divorce. So I ended up moving my son and my children. We all ended up moving to a different city. And so they had to switch schools. I wish I hadn't done that. I was thinking about, you know, wanting to be closer to my job because as a single mom, I wanted to make sure I was close enough to be able to get to them in case of an emergency. And so I ended up moving them closer to the hospital where I was working. And in hindsight, I would say that that was also a bad idea. I should have stayed, let them stay where their friends were, where they were comfortable, where they had established relationships. And so that's definitely also one bit of advice that I would give. Don't change too many things for them at once because it can be so overwhelming that they can't cope. What else would I do different? I think I would have chosen my battles. Definitely not have pushed as hard for certain things to be the way that I thought they ought to be. As far as, you know, really being strict on, okay, you need to make sure these things are done, X, Y, and Z is done. You need to be a little, you know, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know, you guys. So I guess having said all that, the dishes maybe don't matter that much. Maybe I don't care if David comes down to do the dishes because if that's one thing, if he's feeling so much stress already over, you know, being able to accomplish whatever he needs to accomplish in his studying, then let me go ahead and take one for the team. Let me do those things that mommies do so that he can get through this year and succeed or not have any regrets of his own and not be able to look at me and say, it's my fault he didn't pass the test because I had him down here doing the dishes. So that's all I have for you guys today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for allowing me to sound off. And if you have any stories you want to share, please share them. Parenting advice, I'm all in, open to hear it. Please send me an email. Send an email to nurses@americaoutloud.com. And stay tuned. Tomorrow's Nurse Beth's show. I hand the baton off to her, and I know she'll have something amazing to talk about. And in the meantime, remember, we are here to shine a light in the darkness.
It's time.